Good morning and welcome, Jacques Graceback. We are so privileged to have you here this morning.
Thanks so much.
Morning, my wonderful Arthur this morning. How are you doing, buddy?
Very good. Hopefully I can get some more info to you guys today. other episodes.
Welcome, Arthur.
Arthur, we have a goal for you. At least 5 sentences.
Correct. We'll be starting on a good note.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's so special for us this morning, Jacques. Here we sit as a golf show and we have such a professional golfer with us in the studio. And what a privilege this morning for us to have a bit of a chat to you, Jacques. It's so nice to always meet you guys because you're just a normal human that's got, you know, slightly more ambition than most guys, I would say. Mm. Hard-working guy and chasing the big dream at the moment. And thank you for taking the time to come and share this a moment with us, a little bit of your journey. And hopefully we can extract some value out of this for the audience.
Perfect. Thank you very much for having me, guys. It's a privilege to be here.
Yeah. So, Jacques, I just want to sort of dive into straight away into two things here. Your championships that you've won. You've won the Cape Town Invitational. What was that like?
Yeah, for me, that was my first big professional win. That sort of like set the tone for, I would almost say, for my career going forward. You know, it took me pretty closely like 4 years to win on the Sunshine Tour. I couldn't figure out why. You know, always that lingering question, why haven't I won yet? And to get over the line there, you know, being such a big event at that stage also was kind of awesome. And it really, for me, it just literally just set the tone, because a couple of years later, I got my European card and it just got the ball rolling from there for me.
So what is it, just for some insight for all of us as amateurs, so we see you win at the Open Championship and we're so proud and it looks wonderful, but what does that moment do to you? Is it a confidence booster? You know, and I refer it to Arthur, let's say you guys are chasing a particular deal. It takes some time to get that deal, and when it eventually happens, there's like a
sigh of relief.
Yeah. There's something that happens, and it sort of preps you for your next deal, and it gives you that confidence booster moving forward. Is it very different in professional sport?
Well, for me, I have a perfect analogy to try and explain it. You know, for me, it was a massive release of energy, because with any professional sport, but specifically golf, obviously, because we're individuals, we're not part of a team. You know, there's a lot of hard work going in. Behind closed doors, and a lot of hard work not being seen by anybody else except yourself, you know, and you hold yourself accountable every single day to, you know, push yourself to be the best, you know, out there and trying to achieve the goals that you set out for yourself each season. And for me, getting over the line there eventually, you know, for me, it was just a massive, you know, release of energy, and immediately I knew that I'm meant to be here.
Okay.
You know, I'm meant to be here.
That's a big statement.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge, because that's a lingering question for every professional golfer. Am I really good enough to be here? And eventually when you start winning, that sort of like puts a little bit of a emphasis on it in your own mind.
So obviously, listen, it increased your self-belief.
Yeah, there's a lot of self-belief that obviously comes with it, but for me, in that moment there, I felt like I belong here, you know, and I want to push myself to bigger goals and bigger tours, and you know, that's currently where I'm now.
If you really want to feel very bad about yourself as an amateur golfer, go spin around with a pro am with the Sunshine Tour boys. It will annihilate your confidence to another level.
Yeah,
and you feel so good playing against your shitmates over the weekend, because that's your comfort zone.
Yeah.
But you talked about the 4 years there until that win. Mm. I don't want to hop too much onto the win, but that's a lot of players are right in that position right now. They've played on the Sunshine Tour for a while. They're not getting, you know, they're not crossing that path towards a win, or they're not getting the top three placements like they want. How did you stick that out mentally for that 4 years? And what was the... So how do you self-reflect in that moment? Because it's almost called store blindness. You're almost into it so deep, you don't see. Do you get a third party to come in and say, let me have a look at what's going
on? Stop the bus.
Is that?
No, I just want to, you know, add on to what you just said there now is, you know, you need to be very realistic Every year I hold myself accountable each year and I say, listen, this is what I achieved this year. If I didn't achieve the goals I set out for the year, obviously I haven't then achieved my goals. You know, something needs to change. And I wouldn't say major changes brings massive results. Normally it's the smallest little things in your team where you, specifically for me, maybe starting to see maybe a new psychologist.
Okay.
Just to work on the mind. Because every single golfer has a talent to play professional golf, and specifically at a high level. But what separates the guys that win, and not that I'm not talking as a guy that I've won a lot of events. You know, I'm
want to take a humble route in that answer.
Exactly. I still hold myself very accountable each day to listen. I can improve, and why haven't I won more? That's obviously a big question still for me.
Yeah.
You know, why haven't I won more? I keep on hearing it from a lot of people, and obviously there's a little bit of added pressure there then. But obviously it holds me very accountable. It says, listen, maybe something needs to change. Maybe I'm a little bit too deep into what I'm doing now that I can't see, listen, this is not working for me now. This is not working for me now. And I think if you can be a realist, you can start seeing things a little bit differently. Each year, hold yourself accountable. Check off your goals. See, listen, where this is my shortfalls. This is where I need to improve. And maybe get a third party, someone that's very neutral. Not a friend or family or someone that... I always say babies you. Mm. It's friends and family baby you.
Mm.
Mm.
They really do. Mm. Oh, you're going to do it. You're going to, yes, you're looking good for next week. How's the prep going? Yes, you should have won more. You should win next week, man. I've got my money on you.
Or the winners around the corner.
Winners around the corner. Yeah. If I hear a winner's around the corner one more time, I'm going to flip and lose it.
It's probably,
I've heard it so many times.
It's probably the supportive language. You know,
but it's also subconsciously puts pressure on you. You know what I mean? Like, just that little bit of information is now, it's sitting there subconsciously, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Where actually winning, I also didn't win much myself, so, but I'm sure winning just happens on its own. It almost, you know, like, yes, you've got to follow the processes and stuff, but you put yourself in that position and then you win it, obviously. You don't win it on day one, day two.
Yeah,
never.
It almost just, I mean, when you won Cape Town Open, do you felt like you were in a position to win from day one? Did you think about winning, or did you actually only start thinking about winning on the last couple of holes when you were in contention?
I think, just to add on there, Arthur, I think it kind of set in like after the third round where I was leading by two shots, and I really felt I can really get it done because I felt very confident in my game. I felt very confident mentally for the week. And like you said, it happens.
Mm.
I've never heard a guy that's in control of winning golf tournaments. You're not in control of that. Anything can happen. I've led many tournaments where I haven't won. And obviously that's obviously something in my head that I need to improve on also. I get the job done. Lately, the last 2 years, I haven't really been putting myself in a position to win. And that's sort of like something I need to mentally work on going forward. So, yeah.
And, you know, not to take, I mean, then you go ahead and you win the Sunshine Tour Invitational Open in 2021. Mm. You had a bit of a break between that. But then, if hopefully this show will do a lot of that, but if you look at even Tiger, and I'll check, just double check that I'm right on this, but he only won 13% or 12.5% of all his matches he ever played. But here's the scary part. Below him, the average stat is 4.5 or
5%. I think it's 5%. Dustin Johnson. I think it's Dustin
Johnson. So that just shows you he was a freak of nature.
Mm.
Because he'd more than doubled the average winning stats that is normally on tour. So if you put that into perspective, it's not so easy to win. Mm. You know, it's not like you have I should win 3 or 4 or 5 tournaments a year. That ratio that you then speak about becomes immensely hard and challenging to do.
Sure.
But then, what was that confidence booster like? Why did you win the Sunshine Tour Invitational? What happened? What changed?
It's funny, because last year was, for me personally, I overcame a lot of things last year. Because obviously a lot of people, and you know, I want to try and reiterate this in the right way. Sorry, I'm Afrikaans. You know, obviously, a lot of people took shots. You know, a lot of business owners took a lot of shots. And I think that's where we as professional golfers were in a very privileged position. You know, I eventually came back. I had a lot of adversity to deal with family. Some of my family members lost their jobs, and it was hard to deal with. You know, obviously you're around it, and so forth. And, you know, returning back to the golf course and all the travel restrictions that South Africa had going, you know, abroad.
Anyway, yeah.
I think everyone can relate that the travels overseas or professional sports women and men. You know, I kind of felt I essentially lost my card the previous year. I didn't make enough money or points to keep my card, and I only got a certain amount of tournaments that I would get in. And
was this on the Sunshine Tour?
This was European Tour. Yeah.
DP World Tour.
DP World Tour. And it eventually came down to, I played 11 tournaments last year, which every single one of them was small events. And I managed to get my card in those events, which essentially for me, and essentially I ended up leading the stroke average on the DP World Tour last year, and it felt awesome. You know, I'm competing against the best guys in the world there, and I've got the best stroke average for the year. And essentially, it said to myself, well, listen, this has been a pretty damn good year. I haven't got a win yet, but eventually, then the win came in. It was September last year.
Yeah.
On the Sunshine Tour. But it literally was just in between tournaments on the DP World Tour. It fit into the schedule perfectly and was at my home course. And I said, why not? Let's go. And after a couple of days later, I managed to lift up the trophy, which was nice. And it just pushed myself a little bit for that closing couple of tournaments on the DP World Tour. And I eventually got it done. I shot, I think it was a 68 in the final round of the Mallorca Championship. That was essentially my last tournament that I was going to get into. And I knew that final round had to finish, I think it was, had to finish in the top 20 or something. And I shot a 68 and I managed to finish 17th or something. I might be mistaken. I think it's 17th. And that eventually got me enough points to get my card back. And I thought, yes, man, that was nice.
That's just special.
Yeah, very nice. Special.
It was,
yeah.
I didn't get the win that I was hoping for in the year, but I played really good golf.
You know, at some stage, Arthur, we need to dive into how this all works, because I don't think amateurs understand exactly how cards work and what you need to do in order to gain it. It's quite a... But in this process, what did you find is your biggest weaknesses? So... Through all of this, in the last little bit, we'll dive into...
That's a tough question, because men don't want to really talk about their weaknesses.
But I'm happy. If you feel I need to put myself on the spot, I've got plenty of weaknesses.
So, weaknesses in the sense of my journey, my golfing journey.
Yeah, so you and I look back, you're now a mature golfer. Okay, so, and you know, what I loved about Eric when he was on here the other day, he's 32 now.
Mm.
He said to me, he feels like it's only starting now.
Mm.
So golf has got that magic, you know, where it takes time to gain the experience. It takes a little bit of time to get to where you got. And you are, in golfing terms, a young man. You know, if you look at to what age you can play golf, you're a young man. You're not even 20% into your golf.
Golf
journey.
Is getting younger as we sit here. It's actually ridiculous. There's some young guys that's performing exceptionally well now.
But
which is good to see, obviously.
But maybe that leads to the question I just asked you about your weaknesses, because the young guys, what I always see is they come into a professional tournament, the amateurs, and they rank 1, 2, sometimes even win it, because they don't carry the baggage yet. Mm. You know, they're still supporting, they've still got supporting financial roles. They're not on their own feet yet, so that pressure isn't there. And when the real world starts for them, that's when you really see what the guy mentally is made of. Mm. You know, up until that point, it's quite easy to get a good swing, to be a good golfer, you know.
No,
where the moment you guys start playing, you think about the future. You know, my cart that I need to get. I need to pay for tournaments. I need to pay for petrol.
Yeah.
That shit all comes to play.
Yeah, it does.
So now you look at yourself back and you say, these are weaknesses I never identified, or these are weaknesses that I've worked on.
Mm. Yeah, it's a very good question, and I'm going to try and put this in the right context. So for me, I didn't have the most privileged upbringing ever. To give you a little bit of background, when I was in my matric year in school, my parents separated, and it was a massive, you know, not only hit for myself but for my family, my sister, and you know, it wasn't pretty. There wasn't any money. We For about 2 years, I had to go live with my grandparents, my sister, the same thing. And it was hard. It was really hard. Going back to, it just brings up old memories. I'm almost like going out of words here now, but
it's good, John. We cry on the show.
Yeah, no. I'm definitely not going to cry because I've been there and I've done that many times. But you know, I had to really dig deep because I come from a very small town called Nelsrum, and you know, I kind of felt that my career wasn't really going anywhere there. So I decided to move up to Pretoria to sort of like give myself a better opportunity at golf. There's more golf courses there. But eventually I didn't have any money. So I moved up there. I stayed with a friend, and I waited for about 6 months. I absolutely hated it. Absolutely hated every second of it. I was literally, didn't have enough money for petrol, didn't have enough money for food. I barely covered the rent, the half of the rent that I needed to pay. But I always had this yearning goal. I said to myself, listen, this is what you're going to do. I'm not going to go study. I do not want to go study. I can study. I can, but I don't want to do it. So I sort of like had this plan in my head, what I wanted to do. I was a little bit.
Was that when you started playing RGT golf? Or was this
It was before that. Okay. It was before. There was still an amateur that time. And eventually, the opportunity was there to move in with my mom again. So I did that. There was a lot of friction in the house and so forth. And, yeah, like I said, I started a job at Centurion Country Club. So this is all leading to what you're going to ask.
No,
so I just want to give you the background.
I was hoping that that would ignite a bit of a history.
So I eventually started working at Centurion Country Club. And that was, you know, first, well, as an amateur leading into professional golf, it was hard because I needed to pay rent, I needed to pay for my petrol money, my parents cannot cover that at all. It was hard, and I had enough money through that salary to at least put petrol in my car, pay my rent each month, but I didn't have enough for luxuries at all. There was no luxuries.
Yeah,
there was no going out with friends over the weekends because I didn't really have the cash for it. And that, the whole journey leading up to that, put me into a bit of a depression, I would almost say. But it made me very focused on and very hungry to where I want to be. And that closed everything for me like that. And I got exceptionally hard on myself because I was not only working in the day, I was practicing in the afternoons, and I was so hard on myself because I wanted it so badly to be a professional golfer because I wanted a better life for myself. I don't want to, and essentially, in it, as I get older, I do not want to give the same life to my kids.
Yeah,
there's that the next pressure again, you know, yeah. Like everyone else that has a business or anything, you know, I'm not. So, I think, you know, that it counted in my favor for quite a while because it kept me very disciplined.
And hungry.
But essentially it came to a point where I started reaching my goals. I started, you know, winning, like you said, in the Sunshine Tour. I started getting really good results. I started making money, which was a big, big thing for me. And then eventually, as I got older, I got my European Tour card, which was obviously a massive goal for me. And then that same thing that sort of like pushed me to, you know, pushed me so hard was the same thing that kept me back. And I'm still, you know, quite cautious about it every day. I know it's there. It keeps me in line, but it also keeps me back from being the best version that I can be on the golf course, in a sense of not just the best version, but being a guy that can win on a yearly basis.
Yeah.
It's hard. You will, as Arthur would know, and many professional golfers around me would know, I'm very passionate about the game. But that passion comes from a lot of hard work, dedication, my upbringing, and obviously my background. Specifically my background, because I didn't have anything. And I've never, only my close friends know this. Arthur, someone that knows this. I don't talk to people about it. People don't have to know about it. It's just, I keep it in my pocket, yeah. It's always with me. But it's the same thing. It keeps me back today, and it's something I need to still work on and get better.
It's a bit of baggage. A little bit of baggage in the pocket.
It's a bit of baggage, but it's honestly been the one thing that's held me back from, you know, I feel from actually winning more golf tournaments.
So just
that can I moment? Interrupt there quickly?
No, of course.
I'll say so just going like back to when I first met Jacques and we started obviously playing against each other. Obviously, we were friends. Playing against Jacques, whether it is an IGT event, because that's where we sort of started meeting each other, right? And going to the Sunshine Tour. Playing against this oak was going into a ring. I'm welterweight, and this oak was a bloody, what is the...
Heavyweight.
Heavyweight.
Yeah.
But just how he executed it. Like, it was tough beating the oak.
Yeah.
Because he was just ruthless. You know what I mean? He was like a Mike Tyson on the golf course.
But give me a bit of insight. What do you mean? Like...
Well, he was just ruthless on the golf course. Like, he was there to do a job. He wasn't there for a chat between the fairway. He was focus-driven, and he was hard to beat. You get what I'm saying? Like, I'm just now talking from...
Was that a bit of a brag there, huh? That you hard to beat? Did you beat him? Give us insight there. What's the tally here?
Listen, I don't keep a book and saying this is our beaten
track. I think he's got a little black book.
I think he's got a black book.
He's got a little black book.
Jockey, personally, I think so. I doubt.
I think there's been one or two events out of 100 events.
It's definitely got me once or twice.
But
with those hands off your game plan.
With the short game.
Yeah.
I'm not here to compare myself to Jacques. whether or not he's beaten me, I've beaten him. He's where he is today. I'm where I am today. And I'm lucky to be in this position. He's also very privileged and blessed to be in his position. So it's all been good. But, you know, just to reiterate, he was a heavyweight
boxer. Did I call you a bit off there?
You just throw me off a little bit there. But it was hard, like being a friend and whatnot. The minute we were, let's say, in the same group, but there was no Mikey's on the golf course. He was there to do a job. That's why I'm saying he was hard to beat at that point in time when I was still playing. Just to give him... The whole reason why I'm talking about that is because of all the emotion and hunger that he put into it, it was visually there. You get what I'm saying?
Mm.
You could see it.
Arthur, it's in all friendship circles. You always have that one guy, you know, in your mates that knows he's leaving at 8 o'clock, you know. He's not staying there till 10. He's got other stuff to do. We've always got that one mate, and we always tongue-in-cheek it, you know, oh, come on, stay a little bit longer, whatever. But we all know behind the scenes we honor those guys, and what a journey to follow. Jockey, firstly, thank you for being so open to everybody here, because you're a big man. You know, you come from the farm. You're a strong man. We were raised a certain way.
Yeah.
Don't moan about things. Don't talk about things. Yeah. So I'm very grateful that you did that. But I just want to go back to a little bit of the conversation you had there about when you got your DP World Tour. And I know back then it was still the European Tour.
Mm.
Just give us... So now, on the Sunshine Tour, there's either a young guy in amateur status or in professional. They're chasing the dream. What does that moment feel like when you get your card?
Unbelievable, because it's unbelievable. That's a word I can use, because you know, I haven't traveled overseas that much, and I went to Spain, which was second stage, Las Colinas, and again, like we spoke earlier, when winning a golf tournament, you know, I essentially found myself the first round I shot 10 under. Shot the course record, and you know, I had to pinch myself that evening driving back to my apartment where I was staying, close to the golf course, and I thought, I just flew here like 2-3 days ago, and I shot 10 under. And
who's this guy?
And it sort of like went a little, you know, I played under par from there onwards, but I got the job done, and I eventually won second stage, and then I was there for a goal. I was there, obviously, to get through and stuff, but I wasn't expecting myself to win. Obviously, you're teeing it up to win, but the expectations wasn't really there to... So, got in the car, drove all the way up to the final stage venue, got settled in. The weather changed a little bit. It was a lot hotter where I was playing earlier. Now it was a little bit colder. And essentially, again... played the week, and I played with a lot of confidence in it. I keep on saying, if if I didn't, you know, play as well as I did the week before, wouldn't have as much confidence, obviously, going into that final stage. And I played exceptionally well, and I managed to shoot the final round 7 under to finish second, which was nice. And when I sunk that putt and finished second, it was again that release of energy, that massive energy that's been building up for quite a while. That you've, and not everyone can say that they've reached a goal. They've put like a massive goal, like a career goal down and say, listen, this is what I achieved. And I literally did that, getting my European card. And I was crying. I was called. I was at so many text messages from family and friends. And I called my parents that time, called my coach specifically. Me and my coach, we had a couple of long
Who's
words
your
over
coach?
The phone.
Kyle Phelan.
Okay.
Yeah. Based out of Centurion Country Club. So we had a long discussion, you know, and it was a lot of tears over the phone and so forth. And man, it was just awesome.
Did you have a brandy afterwards?
I had a couple of beers afterwards. Okay. Yeah, definitely had a. They don't specialize in brandy like we do, obviously. So I had a beer or two. So, and then yeah, next day was a little bit hungover. Got on the plane, flew back to South Africa, and I think eventually I got back. Wash my clothing. I think the next day or something, I flew to Mauritius to get there for the first event. So, yeah, kind of busy.
Nice. And yeah. Now, it's a two-way question, Jockey. And I hope, how would you say, if I have to ask people about you when you were 20 and 21, who's Jock? What would they say to me? And then if you don't mind thinking about the second part for me, if today I asked that same question of you today, what would people say of that? So when you were younger, if I played around with you and afterwards they would ask me, what's Jockey like? And I'm asking you from a perspective of not just to ask the question. There's a journey with us growing up. You know, what we felt was important at 20 or what we felt we focused on at 20 changes as we get a little bit older. So what, if I ask people today about you, what would they say to me?
It's hard for people to blow smoke up there. You know what I'm saying, and to separate that. To answer the second, I'm going to start nice and then go back down to when he was younger.
Oh, yeah, please do. Please digest it all the way, it's fine.
So I think Jacques is very driven. He's a hard worker. He doesn't go muck around and, you know, go jawling and stuff. He's very focus-driven and sticks to his processes and goals and routines and stuff like that, which is very, very good. And I think he's also a very loyal friend as well. Very loyal guy. If you phone him in the middle of the night, it's not that I've ever done it, but I know if I phone him and he's around and there's cuck, he's there. No, he's that type of guy.
I'm testing that shit tonight.
Yeah. I'm going to put my phone on airplane mode.
He's that type of guy. Whether he's your best friend or an acquaintance, he's that type of guy who will get in his car and help. Okay. And then going back to when he was younger, it's a tough one. Don't take this out of context.
No,
but I think he was, the nicest way of saying it, he was a hot-headed guy. Mm-hmm. Very emotional. There's no good or bad way of saying it, but he was emotional. But he had reason to be emotional. But he did use those emotions to benefit him, you know, to drive him, to get to where he is today. So I think from...
It's a survival mechanism.
Correct. Mm. And a defense mechanism
And
as
a defense
well.
Mechanism.
So, I mean, we've known each other for a long time.
Yeah, we have, yeah.
And we've spent many trips to Swaziland,
Zambia.
I've made my first cut with him, being my roommate. And he's grown tremendously. He wouldn't be on the European today, DP World Tour today, if he didn't go through that and also grow. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm.
So that's a little bit. I don't want to get too involved and list all the negative stuff that I thought you were, because I don't see it like that.
Mm.
But to where he is today, he's grown tremendously. But he was consistent from A to B in getting to where he is today. You get what I'm saying?
Mm. Yeah.
From the hard work, the drive, using all that emotion to get to the success. You get what I'm saying?
Got you. I definitely totally agree there with Arthur, and I feel the perfect way to try and explain it is maturity. I think just through the years I matured, and you know, I had a lot of close friends, luckily, that called me out on some stuff and said, listen, you maybe need to have a look at this, and you maybe need to have a look at that. And essentially that's where good friends come in. You know, you're like I said, you start out with this massive group of friends, and then essentially everything gets a lot smaller, and you really need the people around you that's very like, again, saying that same analogy that I use, people that don't baby you,
yeah,
but are very straight up with you and say, listen, you need to check yourself a little bit on this, you need to do this, or you know, I didn't really like what you said there, or how you handled that. And then eventually you do a little bit of retrospect and say, listen, maybe I am out of my depth there a little bit, and I need to check. But I totally agree with it in the sense of the, you know, a lot of emotion. I've had through the years, and probably still, a lot of baggage that I carried with me from school years, from you know, essentially, like I said to you earlier, the financial situations that we were in, my parents and all that. It's a lot of baggage to carry with me. And for a very, very long time, I didn't have an outlet. I found my outlet the last couple of years.
I was going to actually ask you, what was your release mechanism?
So first and foremost for me was to see a psychologist, you know, to get a third party to say, listen, let's get you on the right track. You know, I felt my emotions was getting the better of me, not only as a person off the golf course, but specifically on the golf course. It was costing me good results, and I needed to change that quickly. And then for me nowadays, essentially like building a solid team around you. That's for me, it's the biggest thing, because once again, I come back to a team that don't baby you, that say, yeah, you've got a good chance next week. Or listen, we're doing the prep. It's when it's going to come. We get the job done. You know, we put in the work, and, you know, people are realists. They're not going to lie to you. They're not going to say, listen, how good you are when you're actually not good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But the biggest thing for me, biggest thing, you're going to laugh now.
Mm.
So about 5-6 years ago, I started boxing. Funny enough, and I'm not saying that I'm a professional boxer at all. I'll leave those to the professionals. But that for me gave me a very good outlet to a lot of frustration that was, you know, creeping, especially after rounds. What do you do when you have like a bad round? Do you take it out in the car on the way home? I'm not a guy that shouts and screams. I'd much rather take it out on something. And my way of taking it out was on a boxing bag. And I essentially through the years got much better with it and so forth. But that was for me still today is one of my biggest outlets. When I can't do that, when I'm traveling European to overseas, gym. I just go to the gym. For me, that is my fixed thing for the day.
Your release.
My release of whatever happened time, for the day, it's my time. I put my earphones in, leave me alone. I'm going to go to the gym now. I'm going to do a lacquer session. And then afterwards, I'm back to myself again. Because I'm not going to be the best version of myself. Specifically, what majority of the times happens when you not have a good round. You know, I've learned. I've had many times previously in my career.
Just leave him alone. Let him sit there in the corner.
Then I would go back to my room.
Yeah.
And then you sit with a bad round in your head the whole day. And you're like, okay, well, you can video call this person, but it doesn't help. You need to get it out. That was mine. That was my...
Well, Jockey, on the note that you're boxing, I apologize for offending you in any way today. And please don't swing at me.
No, I'm very amateur, but yeah, it's good for me.
But that's good, Jockey. And, you know, when we speak about this stuff, Arthur, you know, it's, and I understand every young man and woman, they're going to go through a particular journey. But, you know, one of the messages I always try and get across to young men is you don't have to be a dick about it. You know, attitude gets you absolutely nowhere. There's a difference between confidence, you know, and we all know that line. You're a confident person versus you're actually just not a nice person to deal with. Who do you think you are? Why do you pretend to be better than anybody else? I've always asked, that gets you absolutely No way. Who responds to that attitude? But when we are younger, we get away with it because we're going to grow up. You know, yeah. And it's our way of finding our feet. And Jockey, I want to commend you for some of the challenges that you face as a younger man to stick to a purpose, regardless of what's going on around me. Because, like you said this earlier, and you always refer to it even in conversation today, you know, you always go, when you talk about your journey, you almost always say, yeah, but it's not a hard journey, because you almost want to, don't focus on me. You know, that's what you do. You dilute your journey. And I mean it in a good way, saying that, you know, and then, oh, but everybody goes through suffering. We understand that. We understand that everybody has a story. Everybody has something they're dealing with.
Yeah.
But right now, here you are sitting, and somebody is sitting and saying, you've gone through it. You've managed to lift yourself up from it entirely.
Mm.
It's incredible, Jockey. You know, just for you to sit here this morning, you know, well done on where you are. And I know that you're always going to be hard on yourself, measure yourselves against other successes. But that's also not always the right thing to do. Mm. You know, and I'm very proud of you as a South African sitting here with you this morning, that you have taken charge to also inspire and lead other people at what you do. Now, we know golf is a quite selfish game, you know. And what I mean selfish, it's an individual sport. You know, we always there to support our mates, but when it comes to the professional field, you focus on what you do.
Of course. Yeah.
What is it like to be on a tour in from South Africa and the DP World Tour?
Mm.
What is it like? So, you know, and I mean like amateurs goes on a round of golf and we're chirping. And what is it like on those things? Is it quite stuff? Is it some oaks make it easier to chirp a little bit? What is it like to play on the two tours?
Yeah, so, and again, with all respect, saying the following, you know, I feel it's a little bit more casual on the Sunshine Tour,
okay.
To be honest. You know, there's, you know, I want to put the emphasis on there's exceptional golfers on the Sunshine Tour, and the golf is in a very good space, I feel, specifically for South Africans. Moving on to the DP World Tour, it gets a little bit more serious. You know, all of a sudden, you're not around a group of guys, all time golfers, you alone. You got your team around you, which majority of the guys do. They've got your coaches there, they've got your
caddies
there, they've got their, you know, physios there, all, you know, it goes on. They surround themselves with their team for the week. There's a lot of chirping going on, obviously I'm not gonna deny that. You know, it's always a lot of fun to have a little bit of banter on the golf course or on the range, specifically the range. But essentially when we tee it up on Thursday, you know, it's business. It's business 100%. You know, each guy is there to beat the other guy. You know, I'm not going to make games with a guy that I'm going to try and beat for the day. We're always going to have a lack of chat on the golf course. And if the guy's a chatty guy, I'm not the most chattiest guy, but if a guy opens up, I will definitely, you know, between shots, I'll move up with him, have a water or whatever the we drink on the day, and I'll chat with him a little bit, find out about his background and so forth, but I'm there for business. I'm trying to beat this guy that I'm walking next to. No, there's obviously, it's just...
But I can visualize what you just said, because obviously, yeah, we play out of our comfort zone. It's we're used to the weather. There's a certain familiarity with the guys that's on the course. It's also relatability to each other. And when you get there, that is, it's all of a sudden, it's a different breed. So guys have got a lot more money in the DP World Tour. There's all these support systems around you. Guys are coming with Bentleys to the tournaments. You know, that's reality of it. In the difference into it. So it's good to know there's a little bit of insight. And you've just given us, I think, quite a nice insight into the two tours. Now, I'm putting you on the spot here a bit, Jockey.
I was just going to say, I think from a South African Sunshine Tour perspective to a European Tour perspective, on the Sunshine Tour, you're surrounded with the same guys every week.
Every week, generally, exactly.
You know them, you know of them, you've either grown up with them and got onto the tour. So there's history behind it. You know, you're always going to have that guy that guys that you're going to say hello to and have a quick chat and whatnot. On the European Tour, it's a bit different. Everyone is there for a reason, type of a thing. I'm not trying to banter tour, but it's not okay, I'm here with my friends this week and let's see how it goes, type of a thing. You know what I mean? Everyone's there to do their job. And also because it's a a massive tour with a lot of different guys that you don't know.
Mm.
So everyone just does their own thing.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. It takes a while to get to find your group of friends or something like that, or acquaintances. But it's you know, to compare it like that is a bit different because you've grown up here and you know the guys, you know what I mean? So everyone's a bit more driven because they don't have that, a lot of friends to chat to or go have dinner with and, you know, switch off a bit.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
No, it like I said, just gonna add on to that. You know, it's just being in your comfort zone to you know, not being in your comfort zone, playing overseas. For me, I like being out of my comfort zone. I love it. Absolutely love it. And it's not that I'm saying I don't like being in my comfort zone. Sometimes I do not want to wake up in the morning. Yes. I do not want to go to the golf course now. Yeah, I do not want to go and practice. Yeah. Although it happens a lot.
Yeah.
But I love being out of my comfort zone because I love to test myself. And that's essentially where it comes down to.
Mm.
You're never going to grow as a golfer or a human being if you never put yourself in a position where you're out of your... You need to be out of your comfort zone. If you're in a comfort zone or in your bubble, you will never, ever grow. Never grow. That's just how it is.
Can I just note that for my team as well here? We always say, get out of the comfort zone. And for those that don't know, we've got like 100 people here in production and lights and creative directors. And I'm completely lying.
It's like the Jimmy Fallon show.
There's actually no one there. I'm just pretending to speak to a team. But let's quickly just talk about mental health.
Mm.
Now, we ask, when people come onto the show, we ask them a few questions. And, you know, and I don't want to dilute the part here, but you're a big guy. You're a strong physical presence, and I even not met you officially, but I walked past you at a tournament once. You carry quite a presence as well, you know. You don't look like the most approachable guy. I hope that makes no offense.
Yeah,
fair enough.
You know, but then you fill out the form and you talked about mental capacity, and I was just so amazed by that because I think it's so nice at the moment that there's a little bit of movement in around the world to say it's actually okay to talk about it.
Mm.
But why did you even put mental fitness or mental wellness as part of the points that you made? Let me not speak for you.
So firstly, I want to address the fact that I wasn't very approachable in the golf course. I apologize. Either coming off a bogey but the majority of the time on the golf course, I'm very laser focused on my target. So sometimes I cut out everything else and I'm very focused in front of me. So, we'll have a beer after that. I kind of feel bad now. But anyway, no, mental health has always been at the forefront for me. Like I said, I'm very open to talk about it. Daily I go through mental struggles. And like anybody else, you know, the majority of people just bag it up, don't talk about it. And I've done that for a very, very long time. And essentially that's where the emotions come from on the golf course. And, you know, every person has his own journey. Every person has family members or friends that's a little bit funky, or you name it, death in the family or loss of job. The list goes on. But for me, you know, and specifically the mental health came to forefront when I started traveling overseas, being away from my friends here in South Africa and being away from my family and so forth. Because I'm a family guy. Mm. I like to be around my family over the weekends. If everyone's done with their jobs, we like to come together and we have like a braai. So same with my friends, you know, and you need to be on top of it when you're alone, and you need to deal with not playing so good. You've missed a few cuts in a row and you haven't seen your family and you haven't seen your girl, and now you and your girlfriend have been fighting the last week.
Yeah.
It's like now you're in a weird space and you have nobody to really, you know, rub off on.
Yeah.
To talk to. Because essentially what it comes down to, when you play on the DP World Tour, there's not a lot of people that you really can go and confine him.
Mm. Or go have a dinner and just like guy talk a bit of cuck or, you know.
Sometimes I really yearn to just open up to a guy, have a beer with someone, or someone just says, listen, man, I see you a little bit down today. Mm. Let's go and have a coffee or a beer. I've done it many times, but I haven't really gotten it back. That many times. And I really yearn for it. Where I just wanted to say, listen, man, I've been fighting with my girl the last week, or this is with my parents, or this has been a little bit funky. I can't figure something out on the golf course or so forth.
Lucinda, he said it, not me.
At least I'm open. You know? At least I'm open. It's not like we have the most perfect relationship where we don't fight.
Who does?
It's not what I'm trying to get at. What I'm trying to say is I'm on top of it every single week, and I had to get very like in tune with myself. And working closely with psychologists and stuff really put a lot of things in
perspective
for me. But it's a daily thing. It's a daily thing. When I wake up in the morning, I hold myself accountable to try and be the best version of myself. Wouldn't go out and, you know, be. I'm actually one of those guys. If I feel I'm a little bit weird for the day, I'm a little bit short tempered. I would literally like. Don't talk. I wouldn't. And it's not. Maybe if you see me and I don't talk to you,
survival.
It's not that I don't want to talk to you. It's maybe because I'm a little bit irritated for the day. I'm leaving the home, or I'm leaving where I am to just get out, get my head clear a little bit, get the work done for the day, go home, reset. Next time I'm going to probably be the best version for myself.
But you said about not, you know, feeling to wake up every day. It's such a relatable thing because I you know. my own, and not to you know, minimize a man's, but even if you own Playboy magazine, you wake up sometimes and you go, I don't want to be at work today.
Mm.
Even if you are the owner of Red Bull this morning and you've got access to all these events, you can go anywhere in the world. Yeah. That guy also has a day where he just goes, oh my word, I don't want to do this today. Mm. And that's inspiring, and it's good to have the consciousness about it.
Mm. But the awareness.
The awareness. But I want to add on to that. If you are struggling with mental health, it happens more often. Happens a lot.
Okay.
Happens a lot. And it is essentially for me, what helped for me is I crept everything up. And that's where you would see me as being, this guy's emotional, this guy.
He's a doer.
Yeah,
I wouldn't put it like that.
Yeah. We weren't going there.
The boxing gloves are gonna come out now.
I mean, you went for Duas quite quickly there.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that if I didn't know him well. He gives me cuck all the time, so it's fine.
Yeah, but essentially, it's funny. What worked for me is I crept it up for a very long time. And
you
crept it up.
Okay,
I kept it.
Yeah. The all boat off on.
I needed to. That's why, like I said, I started speaking to psychologists and I started opening up a little bit more. And now today, I'm not a guy that creeps up at all anymore. If something bothers me, I'll talk to you about it. I wouldn't talk to you about the problem in front of other people. I would maybe have a coffee with you or sit down and say, listen, this is how I feel about things and how do you feel about things and all that stuff. So. But it's essentially for me, it's just opening up and starting to talk to people a little bit more and actually finding someone that's prepared to listen. But what I wanted to say earlier is like I said on the DP World Tour, when I said I don't have that many guys that I can really confine in, and I totally respect it. Every single guy there is also focused for their week.
Yeah.
They do not want to sit there and listen to a guy that's essentially complaining about stuff that's happening in his life. Because they're also there for a purpose. They're there to have a great week.
Mm.
And essentially, if they sit down with someone that's, you know, talking about stuff that's happening, it might put them in a bit of a negative mood for the week.
Mm.
So I totally respect and understand that.
I know why you added that. But there's also a call to action to that. For me to say, in life, there is something to, you get a lot more out of giving than taking.
Mm.
There's no doubt that that's a real thing.
Mm.
When we were younger, it was a cliche.
Mm.
But as you get older, you understand that. So I actually say there is a call to action here, where if your mate today, maybe grab your mate today to say, listen, let's go have a beer. Are you okay? Is there anything you want to open up with me about?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing on that too. I understand you're focused in that and you maybe don't want to, but we also can't be that vulnerable all the time that on a Friday night, if my mate tells me about something he wants to share with me for 20 minutes, it shouldn't put me off in such a way that it affects my Saturday and Sunday.
I'm also very similar to that. I like giving, but I hate receiving.
Yeah, it's difficult.
I get a kickback from giving back. You get what I'm saying? That's what I do, what I do.
And I know that of you.
And I'm a very bad receiver. Yeah. If he bought me a chocolate today, I'd be like, you know, thanks.
Awkward.
And then awkward, and I just don't like that. So I think...
Rather buy me a car, is that what you're saying?
No. But I think guys should actually... And I don't want to generalize, but guys should actually give more because you actually get personal satisfaction out of it. You know, you're helping someone else and you get personal satisfaction out of that. You know what I mean? It shouldn't bother you if a guy's talking about his problems to other people because it's not your problems, but you can at least give advice. And be there for him.
Or sometimes just
lift
listen.
Lift him up. Or just listen. You don't even have to say much.
Just listen.
As well. So, I think there are barriers to break.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But that's good. I'm glad that you helped us today to do so. Now, Jockey, let me start with your saddest moment. And I will end up more positive. But what was your saddest moment that you've had in life that you had to overcome?
It's a good question.
Can I break the ice and I can start?
You can. Thanks.
You can.
So when I was 16, I lost my sister in a car accident. And that was huge.
Very tough.
I was actually supposed to play a golf tournament, and my parents told me about it. And I didn't want to let my team down because it was a team event. And we actually played that event and won the tournament. And then went on with the personal stuff, but yeah, that was huge. That was life changing, and just to see what it did to my parents as well was
shame, Arthi. Sorry
about
that.
Was hectic. So just to break the ice, Jock, I don't want to put you on the spot a bit. So
yeah, man. It's obviously never easy to talk about it. I think in our own way, we've all of us have had time to deal with stuff like that and get over it and so forth. I always carry that little bit of memory with you. I think for me, essentially, this is a two-parter. When I lost my grandfather was quite a big thing because I grew up on the farm in Lutrichard for about 13 and a half years, and it was my grandfather's farm. My dad was also in the meat industry at that time, but we lived on the farm. So I saw my grandfather every single day. After school, obviously. And he was a horse breeder, so I fell in love with horses. I fell in love with farming, all that stuff. And when he passed away I'm getting ahead of myself now, yeah. So when my parents separated, we had to go stay with my grandparents again. They essentially looked after us for a period where everything was up in the air. Nobody knew what was going on. And we, as kids, myself and my sister, who was still in school, we sort of like didn't, we had no idea what was going on. But my grandparents had said, listen, you guys are with us. We're going to take care of you for the next while until you sort of like find your feet and find what, you know, understand what's going on. And I lost my grandfather, I think it was a couple of months before I won Cape Town Open. And I vividly remember, you know, him, you know, the hard work he put in. I think essentially it carries through me every single day. The hard work I put in, he was a very hardworking man.
Well, what was his name?
Oki.
Well, thank you, Oki. Thanks for the role you played in Jock's life.
Yeah, Oki. He was a strong man. I always saw him as a strong man. And essentially, when he died, a few days before he died, I held him in my arms. No, he had cancer, and it's something that's been running through my family for, you know, not running for periods and stuff, but we have a bit of a history with cancer and stuff in the family. And he was very weak. And they always say that what's the worst part of cancer is what happens to the people around the person that has cancer.
Yeah.
And I was at my grandfather's hospital weekly, you know, checking up on him, and essentially, yeah, he was so weak at one stage. Seeing a guy that was one of the strongest guys you will ever see, a farmer.
In that way.
And then all of a sudden he's like just crumbling in your arms, you know. It broke me completely. So yeah, it was hard, but he pathed my way going forward.
Gave you a good foundation.
Gave me a very good foundation, as a sense of the understanding of what hard work means. Essentially, if you're a farmer, there's a lot of hard work that goes in there. And awesome. It goes into my golf, definitely.
Awesome. Dangi Omoki. And love those around you, Jockey. Mm. Love those around you and those that you still have time to spend with.
Definitely.
Now, tell me, Jockey, what would you say is your happiest moment?
Happiest moment? Just... Arthur, you wanna jump in there again? Put you on the spot?
Well, you haven't been married yet, so
I'm not married yet. No.
If you, Arthur, if you're gonna say getting married, now you're a suck up. Okay.
It's still recent.
I call bullshit.
It's recent. The celebration on the day was great, so
yeah.
And
when Raylan walks down that, that is just
that you can't describe that. Yeah. So, and then obviously my wife's having a kid in January. That's going to be unreal.
It's going to be unreal.
So
happy and most happiest and terrifying moment at the same time.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. I was joking with her the other day. I said, listen, we just we got to make sure we don't drop this kid.
is that the concerns at the Horns house?
Yeah,
just don't drop this kid, guy. We have a dropping history in this family. Don't drop this.
Don't drop the kid.
The funniest thing, and I saw it again this weekend, is when you hold someone else's baby, it feels like you're holding a piece of glass.
Yes.
It's about to break.
Or shit.
I'm standing there and I said, am I holding it correctly? And then if you give it back to the mom, it's like, come here. Went for where he's going, and there we go. That's the funniest thing ever. Yes.
Yeah, catch.
Yes. No, it wasn't even my baby, and I was so tired after this weekend. We were spending the weekend with friends, and they had a 2-month-old baby and beautiful, beautiful little boy. And I was so tired after Sunday. It wasn't even my baby. Anyway, but my happiest moment, I would almost say when my sister got engaged. It's going to be a funny one. I've had a lot of good memories, but it's something that it's something more for her, and it makes me happy to see her happy.
Yeah.
She's getting married now, December. I'm going to be the MC at her wedding. So I've got some prep and stuff to do.
Well, this was a good introduction.
Yeah. This is a fantastic introduction. Yeah. So, luckily, I can do it in Afrikaans.
Yeah.
It helps a little bit.
A little bit.
But essentially, when she got engaged and she gave me the call and said, listen, she just got engaged, was quite a cool moment for me.
Shema, tell us a little bit about your heart as well, that you can be, one of your happiest moments is in somebody else's happiness.
Mm. No, to see a family member that's gone through a lot with you through the years, to see that person at a point where she's happy. She's happy.
She's thriving.
That makes me happy.
Mm. And then your special or proudest moment?
Proudest moment. There's a couple. There's a couple. Obviously, I can go to golf results.
Whatever it is.
That's easy to say, but you're gonna laugh. But for me, buying my first house was my proudest moment, because
makes sense.
For a long time, I was, you know, I never had the finance to really own my own place, and to eventually sign those documents 2.5 years ago and officially say that I've got a property that's in my name meant the world to me.
Oh, I can.
It's my place. I made it my place. I look after that place like my baby.
Mm.
And as time progresses, you want to look at something a little bit bigger, and you're thinking of family maybe one day and all that stuff, and that obviously comes very quickly. But essentially, I was still single that time when I got the house. But I think for me, proud moment was to sign the papers and say official that was the property.
And we spoke about well done on that. You know, and I'm 40 now, so I'm a bit older. But yes, like, it's very challenging for young people today to get into property, you know, accessibility. You know, if I think about what a three-bedroom house was, you know, 15 years ago versus now, yes, like, it's like doubled. You know, so now your entry, you know, to get into the housing market is a far more challenging thing.
Yes, yeah.
So a very proud moment for you there, Jockey. Well done.
Thank you.
Then I also just want to say, we spoke a little bit before the time, you know, when you said buying your house there, we mustn't chase superficial stuff. You know, I have this big message to guys when on Instagram, you know, you see the Range Rover or the, you know,
Lamborghini,
whatever. And I say, why are you showing me the end result if you haven't shared the journey? Yeah, because all that does is it creates a perception that, oh, I can't afford that. I'm not there yet. But rather show me the factory you built, the hard work you put into the training that gives you the golf result, which then earns you the money. That's far more inspiring than Joel saying, oh, look at me, buying a 330 BMW. Who gives a shit? Seriously, like,
exactly.
Take that shit somewhere else. And I'm sorry that I'm sort of hijacking your conversation there about the buying a home. That's the message that I want to, we must be humble. You know, when somebody owns a house, and whether it's a one bedroom or a studio apartment in Cape Town for 20 million rand, that's what it seems like lately in Cape Town. You can be so proud of yourself. Mm. You know, Jockey, we always speak about it. Men and women, we must start saying it's great to be a plumber. You know, it's great to fucking work on a construction site. Since when is that? If I provide for my family, no matter what I do, why is that not the foundation of success? Why is it, well, I've made 20 million. Okay, you are now super special and successful. Go shit yourself.
Hasn't been shit.
My father was
My
father was a hardworking man. Yeah. At his funeral, thousands of people got there. Yeah. And certainly not because they got a Lamborghini, you know, or even a good sandwich. It was pretty shit.
And I think the story behind what you're trying to say is people think professional golf and being on top was just a click of the finger and you were there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a massive journey. It's a massive sacrifice. It's a massive effort to get there. Mm. You know, the guys that post their mansions and their Rolls Royces and stuff like that. So now I want to be a professional golfer because this is great.
Yeah. Look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is not the case. It's not as easy to do. And, you know, unfortunately, the guys who are reaping the rewards, who's top 100 or top 50 or top 10 in the world, can splash and do what they want to do. But to be a top 10 player in the world is not a click of your fingers, or
definitely
it's not there's something.
I need to stay there.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That journey is tough, and people need to realize that. And it's hard work. It's literally every fiber, like definitely Eric was saying, every fiber in the being that needs to fire to get where you want to be. You know.
Yeah. So. Well, Jockey, you have certainly inspired us today. I'm so grateful that you were here. And before I'll leave it over to you on final thoughts, and I don't want to speak here for you, but I'd like to take a moment. Sponsors is a big part of our lives, you know, and I'm not saying my life, your life. Yep. And I want to thank all the sponsors in a general sense that stands with golfers or stands with sports people or helps develop the game of golf, because Jockey, it's one of the biggest gamblings that you can take. You know, at least with a betting that you take, you have odds 1 to 9. You know, when it comes to a golfer, how do you put that into odds? He's going to make it. He's going to be one of the guys that make it or not make it. So thank you for every sponsor, whether it's individual or corporate, that plays this major role in the behind the scenes cost to help us see golfers over the weekend. So I'll leave it up to you if you wanted to mention something about your own sponsors and perhaps how you feel about all of that.
Look, I totally agree there. I think the Sunshine Tour and the DP World Tour is making a lot of headways. You know, they're doing special stuff to give the platform for the golfers, which is needed. You know, I feel the boost. Sunshine Tour got a very nice boost the last couple of years, and it's great to see the tour is growing tremendously. The DP World Tour is growing. You know, and there's external factors that made this happen. Now the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour obviously putting up a lot more money and sponsors and so forth. But, look, talking about personal. You know, I'm thankful for my sponsors to stand by me, and specifically in this time. This has been a extremely challenging year for me, not just mentally, but physically on my body also. You know, I've double surgery on the left knee. I'm still recovering. I played Monday. This past Monday was my first round back on the golf course after 8-9 weeks.
And?
10 weeks. It was fantastic.
Okay, that's awesome to hear. It's been
fantastic. That's awesome. I enjoyed it. And there was obviously a lot of retrospect that went into, I don't know if any of you have recovered from surgeries before and stuff.
Major knee operation, yeah.
But got into a recovery where you can be very active in a professional sports domain.
That context wasn't in a professional sports sense.
It is hard.
I don't have that issue.
People that say that they can recover quickly is absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
Really, the mental strain that goes into it, because they essentially, you're training a part of your body that needs to get better first. You're not training it to get bigger or stronger. Mm. You're training it to get better.
Mm.
And it takes time.
Mm.
It takes a lot of time, because now your mind is saying to yourself, listen, I've been ready. I wanted to be on the golf course now weeks ago, but my body is saying to me, no, you are going nowhere now.
Yeah.
And it's been a wake-up call. Massive retrospect. And I think that hunger that I've been missing the last year from golf has come back double fold. You know, I look forward to returning to the course, hopefully in November. And like I said, coming back to the sponsors, you know, I've got great people that support me. And, you know, I'm thankful of them for understanding my situation currently. I feel coming back, I'm gonna come back stronger.
Okay. Well, Jockey, I can tell you right now, after today, there will be a lot more people that can relate to you, knows a little bit more about you. Because, Jockey, this is exactly what this is supposed to do. If you think about this, you know, there is no reference where I can just go and sit with Jockey. I'm a fan of yours. A lot of people are fans of yours. And just hear me out for a second. We spend hours watching you guys. Hours. Don't tell us we're not dedicated. There is other stuff in our lives going on at the same time. There's other stuff that you could be watching. When we switch to those channels, the guys come, I'm like, huh? My wife always says to me, seriously, guys, you've been at this golf now for 6 hours with Bryce and you haven't stopped. Then when the golf stops, you still talk about the golf. Exactly. What just happened? She was like, well, didn't you guys just watch it? And now you're summarizing what you've watched.
I think Eric mentioned it on the previous podcast also. I think everyone has this persona that professional golfers are. This, you put them on like a pedestal.
Yeah.
But if people actually like get to know the guys, or you know, the guy behind what he's doing, is a normal human being.
Yeah.
I've got just as many problems as many of you guys do, and essentially maybe more.
I've got no problems.
You know, yeah.
I'm a pretty perfect guy, eh?
Yeah.
No. So don't put me in that category there, Josh.
You know, it's just the same thing, you know. And when I go and play, and again, that passion comes through, I'm a proud South African, and that's what it's about. That's what this podcast is also about. It's proudly South African. You know, we've got unbelievable sports stars, men and women, you know, traveling abroad, playing, and obviously we're a rugby country, but I think golf is in a very good place.
Yeah. We're a sporting nation.
We're a sporting nation out and out, and I think that's what brings us together. And at the end of the day, I can't wait to come back home to have a lekker braai and have a lekker brandewijn. You know, not that I drink brandy every day,
To slip it in there is quite nice.
Fontaine every weekend, or
it's not a,
like a Flacy Piccola or whatever. That's me.
That's my
happy place.
Yeah.
My friends and family around me. I can speak Afrikaans. Obviously, I've got some English mates also. But, you know, that's what it's about. We normal people.
Jacques, if you had your last four ball ever, last round of golf ever, who would be in your four ball?
That's kind of a good question there, Arth. I think the guy that started everything for me, Tiger is obviously someone that I would love to play with, maybe compete in that four ball. Put a little skins or a little bit of money on. I'm trying to include maybe a guy like. It's a very good question. Trying to think now, maybe a guy like Ernie would be a good bet. you know, Tiger and Ernie has a little bit of history. I think it would be kind of a good match, exactly. And you know, fourth guy, I think Arth.
Oh, really?
You know, if we spoke about the comparison earlier, in the sense of where we're at, how many games you've won against each other. I don't want you to go to your grave
I've been crying. I've got a handicap now, so I've got.
you've been crying into your grave, so I might just give you a
opportunity
there to make amends for years
of catch up.
Years of catch up.
Great.
No, just joking, man. I think that's a pretty good four ball for me.
I'd be honored to be in that four ball.
Okay.
Yeah, Jock, I just want to say I just met you, but fuck you for not including me. But Jockey, thank you for taking the time to sit with us today. We wish you all the best. And you inspired us this morning.
Guys, really appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. Thanks, Arthur.
Thanks, Shark. Thanks for being here.
Arthur, you've said way too much on this podcast.
I'm going to make it short and sweet.
Yeah.
Shark, thanks for sharing your journey, your story. Thanks for being brave to talk about the real things at the end of the day. You're not sugarcoating anything. You really dive deep today, and thank you for your time.
Thanks, brother, as always.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
On the next episode of The Human Golf Show.
How it started was a passionate golfer was out there. His name was Philip Young, and this was in the 1930s. And he was on the green, and he had an 8-foot putt, and he missed the putt. Got his dentist friend to actually x-ray that golf ball. And they found that the core of the golf ball was completely off-center. So he got one of his friends to create a machine that did the wrapping of the rubber. And he got a liquid core, and he froze it to make it perfectly round. And they made the first golf ball.